Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. Hello, and welcome back to a Tuesday afternoon edition of the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am joined by a first timer, Stacey Blackwood. Stacey, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Man, I'm great. How about you, Chase?
Not too bad. Do you know any other Stacey's? Like, not a lot of...
There's not many.
No.
I actually have a cousin, a distant cousin, who is also a male, and his name is Stacey.
Spelled the same way?
No, I have an E in my name, and he doesn't.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's the difference. But I'm actually named after a former Alabama player. He played running back at Alabama, you know, by the time I was born. His name was Saran Stacey.
Mm-hmm.
And so my parents named me after him. So that's kind of where that come from.
Is that the only Alabama player that anyone in your family is named after?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. No Brody Croyles in the family.
No, none of them.
Okay. I have a cousin.
We had a few dogs named Brody.
There you go. I have a cousin named Peyton. You're not going to believe this. After Peyton Manning. So there. I understand where you're coming from. I wonder if that's just like a Southern thing. I'm not really sure. But yeah. Well, we're going to be talking about this Alabama football team this fall. The SEC West, I'm just so fascinated by. The East is really a two-team race, three-team if you really, really believe in Kentucky this year. But the West is more open, I think, than we've ever seen it. And I think that is an interesting thing because there's growing pressure in College Station, especially with Texas coming. LSU, there's all kinds of pressure to bounce back there. Ole Miss might have the best quarterback in the West this fall. There's just, and I mean, ESPN's FIP index loves Mississippi State. There are just storyline after storyline, and that's not even mentioning Auburn in this, which I'm sure you're okay with. But I want to start with this Alabama team. Bryce Young, how ready, based on what you've seen this spring and this summer, how sure are you that he is ready to get, just to pick up where Mac Jones left off and replacing the best Alabama offense of our lifetime?
Well, I think it's going to be a little different offensively for Alabama this year, you know, simply because of all the weapons that were lost. You mentioned Mac Jones, and Bryce is going to be replacing him, but, you know, you're replacing two first-round wide receivers, a first-round offensive lineman, in Alex Leatherwood, and then a first-round running back in Najee Harris. So it's maybe not so much about is Bryce Young ready, but are the players around him going to be ready? And there's three guys that are going to be kind of new along the offensive line. going to have to replace the guys out wide, like I mentioned, in Waddle and Devontae Smith. But as far as Bryce Young goes, you know, he come out of high school as, you know, the top quarterback prospect. He has all the tools to be a great college quarterback, not the ideal size, but in today's landscape of football, you've seen players, you know, that are built like Bryce Young have success, you know, whether that's Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, you know, Baker Mayfield isn't the biggest guy. So that doesn't really concern me. He can make all the throws. He has plenty of accuracy. He's athletic. He can, you know, move around in the pocket. But as far as what I've seen from him, it's kind of too early to tell. I mean, if you want to say for sure, but I feel like he has all the talent that can lead to a successful season, you know, in Tuscaloosa this fall.
What have you seen specifically about his skill set that intrigues you most this fall?
I think he's just a very instinctive football player. There was a play in the spring game where he connected with a tight end for a 50-yard touchdown pass, and the pocket was kind of collapsing. Him and the running back had a, you know, miscommunication on which way the fake was going to go. So he had to just slide up in the pocket, just a subtle move, but it was just an instinctive move. And then he delivered the ball to Cameron Latu in stride, you know, where he could turn up the field and run for a touchdown. Just his instincts within the pocket in just the game of football, I think that's going to, you know, pay dividends, especially when you're breaking in that new offensive line and new skill players.
How nervous are you about the offensive line heading into this fall?
I would be lying if I said I wasn't nervous, because it is, you know, you're losing, you know, we mentioned Alex Leatherwood is gone, a first round pick to the Raiders. Landon Dickerson, who I believe was probably the heart and soul of the team last year, having to replace him at center. But the good thing, you know, at Alabama, the guy who's replacing Landon Dickerson at center is a guy who has been at Alabama for 5 years now, and Chris Owens. So he started some games at Alabama. He started the playoff games for Alabama after Dickerson went down with the knee injury in the SEC championship game against Florida. And then, you know, Evan Neal is back. You could make the argument he's the best tackle in college football. Possibly going to be a top 10 pick next year in the draft. So the pieces are there, but, you know, everyone knows that watches football knows that continuity is the biggest aspect and the biggest factor when you're looking at an offensive line. And that just takes experience together. And that takes experience in a live, you know, live bullet, live game action. So it's not going to be surprising to me if it takes a couple games for this offensive line to start to gel and build chemistry. So, I'm a little bit, you know, nervous, but fortunately, I think Alabama, you know, looking ahead, I think, you know, they have more talent than the first couple teams that they're going to play. So I think they may get by with it. But, you know, looking at that schedule, that third game, they travel to Gainesville. So that's kind of when you're going to find out what this team's made of.
John Metchie, is there any chance that he is not the leader in targets and receptions this fall?
The only way I would say he's not the leader is if he had an injury. I think he's a guy who is – you saw last year when he was really that third option, that Texas A&M game is when he broke out, which I believe was the third game of the year. You know, that Texas A&M really wanted to take out Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith, and you know, John Metchie just went off for nearly 200 yards receiving in that game, and, you know – a lot of people don't realize, but he almost had 1,000 yards last year as a receiver. So I think that Bryce is going to lean on him and maybe some of the tight ends like Jaleel Billingsley and Cameron Latu to start the year as he's getting his feet wet. But, yeah, John Metchie is a guy that I'm really excited to see him take on that role as the number one target for Bryce Young.
Is it going to be Josh Job and Jalen Armour-Davis at the two corner spots, or do you think – Armour Davis doesn't have that opposite starting corner spot locked up?
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the most interesting, you know, position battles in camp right now. I would say the right tackle position and then the corner spot opposite of Josh Job. Right now, Jalen Armour Davis is the guy, but, you know, there's a couple true freshmen that are, you know, putting some heat on him, and Terry and Arnold and Kool-Aid McKinstry. And I think as far as pure upside, either one of those guys probably has more upside than what Jalen Armour Davis has. But, you know, he's a junior now, a redshirt junior, actually. So this is his fourth year on campus. He knows the defense. I'm sure he's comfortable with the defense. So that means something as well. But, you know, you can't substitute talent. So I it's not going to surprise me if we see Kool-Aid McKinstry sometime pretty soon in this season. So I would project that Kool-Aid McKinstry is going to be the starting corner opposite of Josh Job.
Hmm. Interesting, because yeah. Saban's been pretty mole on who's going to get that opposite spot. It seems like he's been very upfront about Job, but that other spot is still up in the air. I'm curious, how is Henry Toto'a fitting in with this defense as someone who's watched almost every snap of Henry Toto'a's college career? It's going to be very sad to see him don the crimson and white this fall, but I can't not root for Henry Toto'a. Like, it's going to bother me less than seeing Eric Gray just dominate in Oklahoma and Lincoln Riley's game. That's going to bother me a lot more as a big Eric Gray guy, and just letting him get out of there. And our 1-2 punch right now, we're going to be running with. I know you're shaking in Tuscaloosa with Jabari Small and Deion Evans. So just watch out, folks. Watch out. But what about Toto'a? What have you seen thus far, and how do you think he fits in this fall?
Well, it's fortunate that he come from a Jeremy Pruitt system, so the learning curve is not really that drastic for him as far as the scheme that he's having to learn there in Tuscaloosa. But from all indications, he is fit right in. He's a natural leader, which is something that this Alabama defense really needs. The talent is there, but, you know, a guy at the inside linebacker position to make the calls, to lead the defense. And from all indications, the defensive coordinator Pete Golden mentioned in his, you know, his preseason press conference that he has really surprised the coaching staff at how much of a leadership role that he has kind of taken on, you know, no longer than he's been there. So I think the addition of Henry Toto'a could really, you know, put this defense over the top and really make give them a chance to be, you know, one of the best defensive teams in the country.
The biggest difference in the Bill O'Brien versus Steve Sarkisian / Lane Kiffin offensive scheme will be what?
Well, the scheme itself is not going to be, a whole lot different. Coach Saban mentions a lot that the scheme doesn't really change. Whoever the coordinator is, they come in and run the Alabama offense. They don't run the Lane Kiffin or the Steve Sarkisian or the Bill O'Brien offense. They have to learn what the Alabama offense is, and they just kind of put in their own little wrinkles or some terminology differences. But as far as what we could see that's different this year than what's been different the last couple of years, I think Alabama has a pair of tight ends this year that are both NFL-ready tight ends in Cameron Latu and Jaleel Billingsley. Latu is a guy who's come on really strong. It started back in the spring practice when he scored a touchdown in all of the spring scrimmages, scored a touchdown during the 8A game, and he scored a touchdown in the first scrimmage of fall camp, you know, this past Saturday. So he's a guy who's coming on strong. Bill O'Brien, coming from that NFL pedigree, uses the tight end a lot. We know his history with tight ends. So I think the two tight ends for Alabama are going to see a lot of action this year, which is a little bit different than what we've seen with, you know, the likes of Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Jalen Waddle, and Devontae Smith out wide. Maybe it's just a little bit different as far as who the ball's going to, you know, on a more consistent basis. That's the biggest difference to me. And of course, the quarterback is a little bit different than what we had last year. He's more mobile. You know, may see some more quarterback, you know, design quarterback runs. So those are going to be the two biggest differences that I'm looking to see this fall with Bill O'Brien.
Hmm. Interesting. We're going to pause real quick for an ad break, but we'll be right back. All right, we're back on the Chase Notes podcast, where I am joined by Stacey Blackwood of Roll Tide Wire. Stacey, what has been your favorite storyline to monitor with this team over the last few months?
It's probably been how the offensive line is going to shake out. And we talked about that just a couple minutes ago. And right now there's one spot open. That's the right tackle position. Evan Neal has been the right tackle. Now he's making the move to left tackle. Senior Kendall Randolph has been the guy from the spring and so far through fall camp. But in the first scrimmage this past Saturday, he hurt his ankle. We've not learned the severity of that injury yet, but it's opened the window for a sophomore Damian George or true freshman J.C. Latham to maybe come in and take over that right tackle spot. So that's really the storyline to me of the fall. And if I had to pick another one, it would be Trey Sanders, the running back who was a five-star running back coming out of high school a couple years ago, was really making some noise in fall camp his true freshman season, hurts his ankle, has to miss the entire year, comes back last year, is starting to make some plays for this team, getting some meaningful snaps, you know, in that Tennessee game, in the Mississippi State game. Then he's involved in a car accident, which nearly takes away his athletic career. But now he is back and healthy. He performed well last Saturday in the scrimmage, catching a 20-yard touchdown pass. So those are really, you know, a feel-good story in Trey Sanders. And then, you know, as far as the team goes, figuring out what they're going to do on that right side of the offensive line at right tackle.
Who has been the biggest riser? Give me a surprise. Name a biggest riser in the spring and summer, and the biggest faller in the spring and summer.
The biggest riser is Cameron Latou. I mentioned him a minute ago. He really dominated spring practice and in the scrimmages and A-Day. And he's carried that over into the fall camp. So he's a guy who's really kind of bust onto the scene. And as far as a guy that's kind of fallen off a little bit, it's really hard to pick one because, you know, Coach Saban doesn't really give out a lot of information like that. But I would go with, you know, maybe, and it's really not so much of his play, but it's just kind of injury luck. And that's LeBron Ray. The guy is a senior, and he's battled injuries his entire career. He's out with a groin injury right now. He suffered that towards the end of the summer, so he hasn't, you know, really practiced yet during the fall. And he's a guy that when he's healthy, he's productive, but he's just not ever healthy. So that's kind of a guy. It's unfortunate for him. Fortunately for Alabama, though, there's about 8 or 9 other guys along the defensive line that can play. It's unfortunate for LeBron Ray, but that would be the guy that's kind of – that stock has kind of declined a little bit, and that's really just because of injury.
Who matches up worst for Bama in the SEC West this fall?
Wow. I would say Ole Miss. I mean – that
a tradition unlike any other.
Yeah, it's Lane Kiffin, man. I mean – I don't really know what else to say. You talked about Matt Corral. I think he's the best quarterback in the SEC. Mm-hmm. I would take him over JT Daniels. I would take him over, you know, at this moment over Bryce Young. So you're talking about Lane Kiffin, one of the great offensive minds. He's got a great experienced quarterback who has weapons. Jerrion Ealy is one of the better running backs that nobody talks about in the country. Mm-hmm. Now that defense is a huge question mark for them. They really can't stop anybody. So, but you know, Lane's going to throw everything at Coach Saban. He wants to beat Nick there, and it would make it even better for Lane if he done it there in Tuscaloosa. So that's really the game that really bothers me the most. LSU and Texas A&M have a lot of talent, but they also have a lot of question marks as well. So I'm going to go with Ole Miss just simply because of the Lane Kiffin factor.
This schedule, it's just really, really tough, and it's hard. It's Alabama, so they're going to win the majority of these games. But like when I look at it and I look at the rest of the SEC right now, I see a lot of landmines on this Alabama schedule. I'm more concerned about this schedule than I've been in recent years. I think when you come off a national title run and the kind of run that Alabama went on last year, you're not going to shed a lot of tears for this program. But I do think, like, opening with Miami, a good Miami team, it's huge. Like, going to Florida in week 3 is just that's a lot. I think Ole Miss at home, like you said, that will help being the biggest thorn in their side. But right after that, they're going to Texas A&M, going to Mississippi State. You get Auburn on the road to end the season. Like, this schedule looks like 10-2 to me. And I really can't see Bama. I mean, I shouldn't say I can't see. I am leaning more towards just betting on the field in the West than I am on Bama doing that. And I mean, that might not matter, and it might be better for them to avoid Georgia in the SEC title game, or Florida, whoever gets out of the East. When you look at the schedule, do you see 10-2? Do you see a few losses that Alabama fans are not ready for?
Well, anytime Alabama plays at Auburn, there's a great chance that that Auburn can get that upset. It's just something about playing at Jordan-Hare Stadium that's kind of been a thorn in the side of Alabama. So that's always possible. Playing at Texas A&M is not going to be an easy game. And then, like you mentioned, right after that, they're heading to Mississippi State, who I think is a team who could surprise some people this year. We all know that Mike Leach is entering his second year, and if you look back at what he's done at his previous stops, there's always a major roster turnover in that first 12 to 16 months that he's at a program. And then he starts getting his type of guys, and he starts turning that program around. So that's a team to watch out for. So that's not going to be an easy stretch of games, you know, when you're talking about Ole Miss at home, at Texas A&M, and at Mississippi State. So that's a tough stretch. I'm not going to bet that Nick Saban goes 10-2 because that's just so rare that it happens under Nick Saban. But 11-1 would not surprise me at all. Now, where that loss comes, it could be Ole Miss, it could be Texas A&M, it could be at Auburn. So 11-1 is probably what I would go with if I was predicting a regular season record for Alabama. It's hard for me to fathom Nick Saban losing two games in a regular season.
All right. Well, what can we check out from you across your Twitter feed, across Roll Bama Wire? What can we look out from you on the podcast front this week? Let the good folks know.
Yeah, well, you can find our podcast at Tide Talk Pod on Twitter. We're just going to be recapping everything that's happening in fall camp right now. My Twitter account is at Blackwood89. You can find me on Roll Tide Wire, which is a part of the USA Today network, their college wire system, where they're putting out new teams, you know, all the time. I think there's about 16 college wires right now, and of course Alabama's one of them, and I'm excited to be writing about that and covering this team for Roll Tide Wire. It's a great time to be able to be covering Alabama. Obviously, the Nick Saban dynasty has been something that we'll probably never see again, and there's going to be a lot of sad people in the state of Alabama when Nick Saban hangs it up.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Who would you predict as the first Saban assistant to beat him?
Ooh, wow. Probably Kirby Smart. I mean,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, if it happens, and if it's going to be Kirby, it's going to be this year. I think this is Kirby's best shot. I mean, I'm thinking Alabama could go 11-1 in the regular season, play Georgia, and if Georgia's on their A game, and Kirby could get it done this year. But if he don't get it done this year, then I would probably go with Lane Kiffin. Man, he's always going to be throwing his best at Nick Saban. So it's tough because, you know, Jimbo has good teams at A&M, but his offensive line's going to be it's a real work in progress there. They lost four or five starters there, so not sure about their quarterback situation either. So that they have a lot of question marks as well. So I'm just and you know, Alabama really they dominated A&M last year. The final score was 52-24. So I'm not sure that gap is as close as what some people are trying to make it out to be.
I still think it's gonna be an offensive guy. Like the Kirby stuff, I just don't think it's going to be a defensive assistant that ends up beating Saban. We've seen this before with the Hugh Freezes of the world, where like the way to get Saban is the unique offensive approach. And
you're right.
I don't think it's going to be Kirby. Like I think the path for Kirby and Jimbo is like taking that L and avoiding them in the SEC title game or avoiding them in the playoff. Like I think they can still win a national title, but I think it's avoiding Saban. I think the guy Saban loses to is a former assistant, whether it's Sark next year when Texas is probably in the SEC, because I refuse to believe that the Texas-Oklahoma situation just plays out over 4 years in the Big 12. Like there's just no way that awkwardness happen. It's just not a thing.
You're not gonna keep living with your ex after you break up. That's not gonna happen.
No, I mean it's gonna happen for a year because it's just too soon. But like I think people who are wondering if that's gonna last throughout the 2025 or whatever the deal runs out. So I'm like, I would bet on Texas and Oklahoma being in the SEC next fall. That's what I would say. But yeah, we'll see. But my guess, it's Sark or Kiffin would be my guess at this moment. All right. Well, thank you so much, Stacey. This has been great. Thank you so much for making the time today on this dreary Tuesday afternoon here in Knoxville. But thank you so much, and let's talk again soon.
Hey, I appreciate it, Chase. Have a good one, man.
All right, the Tuesday night edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast rolls along, where I'm now joined by a first-timer, Zach Allen of Dream Shake SBN, a very good Houston Rockets blog that you should go check out if you have not already. Zach, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm living, man. How about yourself, Chase?
Not too bad, not too bad. Wrapped up an episode of F-Boy Island, the girlfriend, before we started recording. So, you know, if you have any reality television questions, I have got you covered. I'm well versed now.
Really? Mm-hmm. I only watch TV shows. So really, bro, like I'm watching something. I'm probably watching like Raising Kanan. I'm probably watching Grown-ish.
Okay.
I'm probably watching Netflix series. You know what? I finished a really good Netflix series. I forgot what it was called.
It sounds good.
It's actually really good. I'm not sure if it's appropriate to say, but it's actually pretty good. You know, pretty good series. I would definitely send it to you in your DMs or whatever, and so you can see it. But my wife and I, we enjoyed it. Pretty good show. Mm-hmm. Netflix can touch every now and then. I just finished a movie called Beckett. Beckett was pretty good, too, as well.
Bacon?
No, Beckett. Beckett.
Beckett. What is that?
It's with David Washington. Denzel Washington's son.
Oh, okay.
His girlfriend and him are basically, you know, they're in another country. They get in this car accident. He fell asleep while he's driving. Wakes up one morning, she's not there no more. She was there in the car wreck, but then he woke up, was like, where's she at?
Yeah.
He's looking for his girlfriend, and these four people help him out. I don't know, our folks are shooting at him because he's basically involved inside of a little boy missing. He had no idea what was going on. So everybody's shooting at him, and he's trying to find his girlfriend, and it's just a whirlwind, bro.
I would never get into acting if I was Denzel Washington's kid.
Really? Why not?
I am not following my father, if my father's Denzel Washington. It's like the whole Michael Jordan thing where it's like his son's playing basketball was just an absolute mistake. Like, I would never do that. What you do is if they're an average person, like Steph taking over for Dell, it's like, I can beat my dad. I can be better than my dad in the NBA. Solid pro. I can be better. But like, you can't follow Denzel because there's no chance that you're going to be better than your dad. Like, there's no path to you being a better actor than your dad. There's no chance.
He actually had that bad. I did enjoy the movie.
I'm not saying he's bad, but like you can't be that good. So I would just be so insecure that I'm like, am I close to what my dad was?
Hey, man. Hey, man. As long as you put millions on bank account for acting, I don't care. I don't care at all, man. So, But like I said, check out Tenet. I think you'll like. And then
I've heard about that.
Tenet and BlacKkKlansman was pretty good. I started watching him when he was in Ballers with The Rock, which was a pretty decent HBO series. It should have been longer episodes for it to be better. But I did enjoy Ballers, which I've seen him in. He was playing like a wide receiver for the Miami Dolphins and got traded to the Patriots and so on and so on. Mm. But it was, I like his career so far. Michael B. Jordan's my guy. And it's like
he doesn't make a bad movie.
Yeah, man. What did you say? What again?
No, I'm saying he doesn't make a bad movie. Like Michael B. Jordan just, he only puts out classics. Like that guy is very selective. He only picks the right roles for him. He's like I'm just gonna follow Coogler wherever he goes. The guy knows how to book me. I'm gonna do that. I mean, he only really has one bad role, and it's the Fantastic Four. That was his one mistake. Yeah, where he did that.
Just gonna say that.
That's it. But yeah, no, he's right there. And also just the name, Michael B. Jordan. He has to be Michael B. Jordan. There's something to that name, maybe.
Anytime you have Michael Jordan in your name, you're pretty good.
Exactly. This man doesn't have Michael Jordan in his name, but Joel Embiid, still a pretty good center in my estimation. Yeah. He got paid, and he's getting paid a lot of money in Philadelphia because he's still getting his current check. That is an exorbitant amount of money. He's going to make an exorbitant amount of money after this extension kicks in next year. What do you make of Joel Embiid's extension in Philadelphia, and are you at all concerned about anything about it? Like, what do you make of it?
No, I think it's a perfect fit for him in Philly. That's home for him. So I think Philadelphia will welcome him back with open arms. That extension is well deserved. He's proved his worth. He could have been the MVP this year, but you know, injuries, happen, you know, and I, you know, Jokic won, of course, but I mean, really, Jokic, my fault, Jokic, but I think, you know, Embiid should have gotten MVP this year if it wasn't for the injuries. But so, like I said, he proved his worth in the playoffs. You know, he's a good post up guy. He's able to put the ball on the ground from the perimeter. So, and he's a big man that, you know, he feeds off double teams. So, it's just no brainer to not give him attention. And plus, Daryl Morey, he always takes care of his superstars. And he always makes sure they get paid because William James Harden. So he's going to make sure John B. gets paid. But, you know, the whole drama between him and Ben Simmons, or Ben Simmons in general, man, it's just a whirlwind right now.
I just, like, he has a player option of $54.22 million in 2026-2027. Yeah. He's going to take that. But, like, I would just be like, I'm not doing a podcast anymore if Joel Embiid is still worth $54 million in 2026. Like, the thing that scares me about him is he's so good now and he's so ready now, but he just played with a torn meniscus. We know about his history. Like, I don't see this man being healthy 3 years from now. Like, the cynic in me would just be terrified of giving, but like at the same time, he's the most important figure on your team. He's the guy. He is the ultimate, like the city loves him. You have to do right by him. He's your biggest star since Iverson. Like, he can get you to the finals if you build the right team around him. He is doing everything. Like, he's playing hurt for you. Like, he is literally playing hurt to do everything for your team. He's unguardable, having just watched my team play him in a 7-game series. Like, he is everything you want. And a bit, like, he's just a rare big now. Like, he is someone who you can actually build your offense around and build a championship contender around, because there are just not many bigs like him anymore. But, like, the idea that he is going, like, this is going to be a good contract at the end of it, I don't think so. Like, this is going to take him through 2025, 2026. Like, a lot can change between now and then. So, I don't know. I just think that there's a strong possibility for me that this contract looks atrocious 4 years from now.
I understand that. He was, you know, I think what could help Embiid is basically rehabbing, you know, not just him rehabbing, but making sure you're training properly during the summertime, because he has had an injury, a history with the 76ers. That's why it's important to put the right people around him and making sure he's taking care of his body well. Definitely eating correctly. I remember him eating hamburger before the game started years ago, you know, when he was maybe his second year in the league, third year in the league, he was caught eating hamburgers on the training table. And that was probably the reasons why he couldn't stay on the floor as much. He wasn't in shape.
Love Shirley Temples.
That too. And you got to be able to – it's just important to make sure you take care of your body, because you're playing so many games and you're doing so many practices. And, you know, I think if it was a full NBA season, I think he would have probably stayed, you know, healthy-ish and won MVP like I just said. But everybody – this year got injured because the season was so crunched up in 72 games. These guys are going back and forth from city to city. The nights, they weren't having back-to-back nights, but practices where they really couldn't get really informed into the system. Definitely if you were trading. So, you know, a lot of guys were getting injured besides just Embiid. But I do understand your point. You know, it could be, you know, you're thinking far, 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 far ahead in the future, man. We just worried about right now.
Yeah.
I understand you're worried about injuries and stuff like that, but I just think, you know, I'm pretty sure Doc Rivers will make sure, you know, because Doc Rivers has had players get injury prone players on his roster. You know, Blake Griffin, of course, Chris Paul. You know, those guys have, you know, his last 2-3 years in LA with those guys, well, I won't say two last 2-3 years, but in their last, what, 2 seasons with him, they weren't ever healthy. And so I think what Doc has to do is what they're doing pretty well is they're building depth. And that's what you need to do for a guy like Joel. If Joel goes down, okay, I can count on maybe a guy like Tyrese Maxey. Mm-hmm. You know, Tobias Harris was pretty good. I said his name right, Tobias Harris. I'm making sure.
It's Tobias Harris.
Tobias Harris.
Yes, Tennessee legend, Tobias Harris.
Yes, I have a friend named Tobias. His name is Tobias Bass. I get confused sometimes.
You actually know Tobias in real life. There's not many of them.
No, there's not really many Tobias. There's probably like, I think, 2 more. And I think it's the old one. I never went. I don't know, I lied. But like I said, I think you know, he's playing better basketball. I think they try to trade him to the Rockets, which I cover. So, I mean, you know, I just think Joel has to do everything proper, like getting a right, you know, eating coach, rehabbing. You have to make sure you take care of your knee. That man tore meniscus, so that he has time to actually heal his has time for his knee to heal over the summer. So, I think, you know, don't be too pessimistic about Joel Embiid, because I think he'll be pretty good in the future, man.
I just, like, he would never agree to it, but, like, the one-on-ones that Kawhi is doing, like, I would take the Kawhi approach to him. Like, just the, we are going to put the best possible team around you right now. I mean, he's, I think, 3 years younger than Kawhi at the moment, but, like, it's the same kind of thing, where it's like, we're going to surround you with Paul George, Reggie Jackson, guys who are ready to win now, but, like, we're not going to give you 5 years. Like, we don't know if you'll be able to not walk like Kevin McHale in 5 years. Like, I have no idea. Like, I would do one for one over and over again. I'm like, I will pay you 50 million. Like, I wish they could do that, of just being like, we will pay you whatever you want for the next, like, year to year. We will max you out year to year, but, like, we got to see what this knee looks like and these feet look like 2 years from now. But, like you said, this is still something you just got to do for right now, because it's Joel Embiid and he's an MVP candidate. Bledsoe, now back in Los Angeles. We don't have to Photoshop any jersey swaps for Eric Bledsoe. Pat Bev gets moved again after tweeting out grit and grind and getting excited about Memphis, who he really did feel like a Memphis type player, but he's moving to Minnesota, where I think he actually has history with Rosas when Rosas was back in Houston years ago, and Pat Bev got his start in Houston, which feels like forever ago now. But I like the fit for all involved. Like, I like Culver getting an opportunity to reset in Memphis. I like Pat Bev being just a defensive whiz for this Minnesota team that needs competent defenders on this roster outside of Josh Okogie. So I think I like that fit a lot there. And then I like Bledsoe just being someone that the Clippers can actually count on, and it not be Luke Kennard and it not be Reggie Jackson, or just be like, oh, now we have an answer here where we don't have to keep throwing shit at the wall and just hope that we can piece together this league guard rotation and give us somebody we trust, like a vet that can play and especially get us through these several months, maybe 6 months without Kawhi. What do you think?
Well, I like Reggie Jackson a lot too. Mm-hmm. He had a great playoffs.
Yeah.
But Eric Bledsoe, I think, you know, that they trade, everybody wasn't a big fan of him. I know I wasn't. I'm like, we traded all this for Eric Bledsoe. Like, why would we give up Rajon Rondo, maybe Patrick Beverley, and another cap that they gave as well, including a draft pick. But when you think about it, summer league, right? I think they're liking, you know, Scrub, of course. They're liking Boston, of course, and another cat as well. That Keon Johnson. They like how these three guys are playing. So I think they're confident. And getting rid of the, you know, a much older guy like Rondo. Just not to get off topic. If I was the Milwaukee Bucks, right, I would try to do everything to get Roger Rondo. But back on topic, right. I like the fit for Culver. Like, we both agree. Like, Culver is a perfect fit for that young core in Memphis. Like, whatever that Memphis front office is doing is off to a great job, because they're getting more debt. And they're building more younger talent in that roster and for them to grow. And I think, you know, between the Grizzlies, the Pacers, and the Rockets will be really, really scary within the next 4 to 5 years from now. It could be three, but I like Chris Dorton. He's pretty good for the Pacers. But like I said, I think, you know, you're putting Jared Culver, Hernandez. Hernandez is a pretty good versatile guy, but you can space the floor out with maybe a decent shooter. I wouldn't say energy guy, but it's a good body to have on the floor out there. You're adding more depth. Steven Adams is there now, so you're getting more of a veteran presence. You're putting Patrick Beverley in Minnesota, which they need a veteran leader badly. I mean, yeah, Karl-Anthony Towns is a good leader, right? But Patrick Beverley is a veteran that who's been in like Western Conference Finals, who's been in playoff games, who has all the experience. A really great defender. He's really a nag. So he's gonna. And then this actually shows more focus around Anthony Edwards. You know, they passing a torch for him. So, you know, I think they have their starting point, because I'm pretty sure they traded Rubio to the Cavs.
Yeah, Rubio is the backup point guard in Cleveland now.
Yeah, he gets around more than ever. But I like the whole fit what's going on, but I just think the Clippers organization trust those three guys, but they have on a summer league team, and they're probably going to give them some decent minutes. Maybe Boston is sent to the G League a couple of times, but Jay Scrub is ready to go. I think Keon Johnson will get minutes there and there for the Clippers. But I just think, you know, the Grizzlies, man, that front office needs a pat on the back, man, because whatever they're doing, like I said, man, they're doing a good job, because Ja Morant, you know, you see how those guys playing. You see how those guys playing the playoffs. They were able to win the first game against Utah Jazz, even though, you know, Davion Mitchell wasn't there. He wasn't there. Dee Mitchell wasn't there, right? But I think they won with game two or game three. I think it was his game series, I think. But it was a pretty interesting series. But you adding more talent to that, man, makes him much scarier for the future, bro.
Absolutely. Let's talk about your team, the Houston Rockets, team you cover. Jalen Green, obviously in the news for what he said about the number one, number two pick. We'll get to that in a second. But in terms of actually on the court and what you've seen from your new Enes Kanter as well, along with Jalen Green, like, what have you seen out of this summer league group from Houston, and what are your takeaways thus far from Green and the young guys in Houston now?
Man, I love it. I love everything about it. When I think about our squad, I think about the OKC Thunder from, 2009 to 2012. You know, James Harden, Russell Westbrook got to the Thunder team around 09, right? Took them 3 years to get to the NBA Finals. You know, the West is so tough. But, we have Kevin Porter Jr., we have Christian Wood, and, you know, the coaching staff, the front office is really excited about, you know, adding more young core and getting more depth. Because we dealt with a lot of injuries last year. We had to basically just pull players from everywhere, from, you know, different teams, just to add people on our roster and build pretty good talent throughout the season. You know, like Amani Brooks, he shot 9 triples in the last 9 triples, 30 points in the whole entire game, and they had a 12-2 run and beat the Blazers. Behind him, you know, Alvin Sagun, man, he's an amazing versatile center, dude. Like, he's not that very athletic, but extremely good. He's going to be a nuisance. He's pretty good against the free throw line because he has a slow body motion, and he's very patient. He knows how to pump the guy and get to the free throw line, which you need that. And, you know, he's definitely a rocket if you can get to the free throw line, if you know what I mean, man. Jalen Green, man, he's, you know, we'll talk about the comments like you said, but he's had a terrific summer league. He's proven everything that he was worth. The number two pick could have been number one, but number two pick, right? Dude, he had an amazing summer league. Like, he showed scoring at all levels, right? From three levels, from able to put the ball on the ground, from able to do drive-bys, from able to pull up, from able to do step-backs. So he's proven everything that he was worth, and he's actually been a good defender in the summer league. Now, it has transitioned to the NBA because it's going to get tougher. It's not just, you know, summer league because you're playing against guys who are making the team or guys where, you know, you might not see them no more. But you're going against NBA vets who can, you know, who are very versatile with the ball. You know, can you play defense on a higher level now? That's the big, big question, right? It's just the fact that what will the Rockets do with this roster, right? So much talent. Training camp, I promise you, bro, it will be so intense because you're going to have guys fighting for minutes because Silas has his hands full of saying, like, man, who am I going to put in the court? Now, I already know who's going to go in the court. Of course, John Wall. Wish we could buy him out, but we can't. John Wall has to play. Jay Sean Tate has to play. Christian Wood has to play. They think, you know, the athletic reporter, Daniel Tyson will start. So, you know,
how does Jalen fit with John Wall? How do their skill sets work? Because we haven't seen it yet. John Wall obviously not playing in summer league. So how do they, based on what you've seen from Green, how will they work on the court this fall?
I want to see if John Wall will take a step back and let Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. take off. You know, I want to see, and you want to see who's actually going to bring the ball up the court. I'm pretty sure John Wall is the point guard, man. Come on, man. Kevin, as long as John Wall is there, bro, unless he's not on the court, he's the number one guy. He's going to dribble the ball up. He's more experienced. You're going to put off the ball. You're going to take turns. Jalen Green can put off the ball, on the ball. So that's the best thing about him. It's so hard to find guys who can put off the ball. Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. can do that. They can put off the ball. John Wall can kind of put off the ball. So I want to see if John Wall took a step back and let Kevin Porter Jr. and John Wall – I don't know. If Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green can do most of the scoring while he is just a distributor, leader, guy who puts guys in place to score, just being a point guard, you know, and still getting his buckets, but just not trying to always play hero ball. That's the biggest thing about John Wall. Like, will he take a step back and not play hero ball and let guys like Jalen Green – but probably take that shot at playing hero ball a little bit, because I mean he's made terrific shots. He's made unbelievable shots, like superstar shots. Like when you're able to just throw up a shot, lean into your left, shoot the ball, you can be a superstar in the league, because they only make shots like that, which is ridiculous, man.
Did you see enough from Steven Silas last year to believe that he is up for developing Jalen Green into the next superstar in Houston?
Of course, man. He's worked with a lot of guys. Steph Curry, LeBron James. He's always brought up that Baron Davis. You know, he's a very patient coach, a very smart, intelligent coach. Organically, man, he can draw X's and O's in the back of his head and put guys in different positions on the court, from the top of the key, from the bottom of the key. He's going to know what to do. But like I said, his biggest problem right now, and it's a good problem, is rotation minutes. Like, who's going to get the minutes? Like, he's going to make sure earn their minutes. Like,
who are the biggest battles right now when you look at it? When you look at the rotation and what it's going to look like, who are you thinking most about?
I'm pretty sure Alphen is definitely a gun. And even though he's had a great summer, like, he's definitely fighting. I think Josh Christopher will go to the G League a little bit. But I can see Josh Christopher getting some minutes. I'm pretty sure... I'm really curious about DJ Augustine. Will they play him a lot this year? I don't know. Will he be just a veteran guy that's talking on the bench? It could be possible. I think it's just time to maybe take a step back and, you know, take less minutes.
Eric Gordon's a huge question mark.
He's going to play regardless. John Wall and Eric Gordon going to play regardless. Those are vets. You need those two guys.
Well, I'm just saying, like, are they a part of the long term? Like, do you think Eric Gordon gets moved? Like, Wall is going to be a little bit more difficult, but like Eric Gordon, I'm curious if he gets moved.
I think Eric Gordon gets moved by All-Star break, because his contract will be better. I think John Wall gets moved next summer. We got to do another year with John Wall, which is okay. I think he will be playing with Bowden and a chip on his shoulder to prove to people that I am a good NBA player. I can play, so he's going to have a lot to prove.
What about Kyrie Thomas?
Kyrie Thomas, I think his minutes might shrink. I think KJ Martin, Kyrie Thomas, I think Alphonse Sengun, I think those three guys are fighting for minutes right now. I'm pretty sure Jason Tate's minutes are good. Mm-hmm. He's going to get his minutes because he proved last year that he could play everywhere on the court, and he was first team rookie.
Yeah.
So why would he not get minutes?
Just too good of a defender.
Defender. Really good defender, bro.
Now you got Daniel Tice, so the West is yours.
Yeah, he actually gets to start this year. That's really
he's gonna start. And do you like that fit with him in Wood?
I like it because he's a veteran. He knows how to set picks. He knows how to position his body, rebound, energy guy. Knows what he's doing. And he's trying to shoot more threes, which is pretty interesting. Another thing that's interesting is Daniel House. I think is he fighting for minutes too? There's thing about giving him an extension, which is weird to me. I'm pretty sure three guys that if I was Eli, I would try my best to see if I can, you know, they like Daniel House because I'm pretty sure they like House because he's young. You know what I mean? So he's a young guy, you know, energy guy, you know, he makes key buckets when it's supposed to. But then there's times where I'm not a fan where we're going 10-2 run or 12-2 run or whatever run we go, and he misses a shot, and the run, the guy go down, you know, whoever scores, and the momentum's dead. He's a momentum killer, you know what I mean? So, David Nwaba, what his minutes going to look like? He got extension. So, they got all these guys, they got that they're bringing back, they want to play. And he was pretty good last year, too, with the Rockets. You know, good defender, pretty good in transition, but... you know, I see, you know, David Nwaba, he's an injury guy. Like, this is going to be an intense training camp, but you guys might be throwing hands in camp. I pretty sure.
We'll see.
It's going to be a good camp, man.
Did you have any problems with what Jalen Greed said about Detroit and that whole situation? Do you think it was overblown? Jalen chimed in on it today. Like, what do you make of everything that was said?
I thought it was funny. But I like the fact, I like how Jalen Rose responded to it, though. You know, he's a Detroit native, you know, old guy. Old Jalen. I was listening to a podcast earlier about what Jalen Rose was like when he was playing NBA basketball in college, how he talked noise. This was old Jalen Rose. He probably would have talked some noise because that's the city. But Detroit, man, like, Jalen Green wanted to be there, number one pick. I think he wanted to go number one.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he should have just kept his tongue, kind of, like, you know, because karma sucks, bro. Like, karma sucks, bro. You don't want to go have your worst night in a city that you just dissed. I mean, I'm pretty sure they're going to boo you and you're going to get over it, but you don't want to have your worst night and then get, you know, the upper hand, like Kate Cunningham wins that battle that night, you lose. There's some comments I wish he never walked into. I thought it was funny. He's an NBA player. He's trying to put a bad villain, but I'm pretty sure, you know, the coaches called him or somebody, you know. I wish he never walked into that crap. I don't know if Chris Greene-Hings set that trap up.
Mm.
But I wish he never said that and walked into a trap if it was a trap. Because the media can do, I mean, I'm media too, but I'm a good guy at heart. I'm not going to put you in a trap, bro, because karma sucks and you don't want to regret what you say in the future, man. That's all it is to me.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Marcus Smart, do you like the extension for Boston? It looked like he was maybe going to get moved the last few weeks. Didn't get moved. Instead, gets an extension. I was talking to Mark Murphy, the Boston Herald, yesterday. And the plan is for him to transition to more of a league guard role and be on the ball a lot more, especially with Kemba being out of there and taking some of the pressure off Tatum and Brown. I don't know. Peyton Pritchard showed out in summer league, so he's probably going to get more opportunities to be the lead ball handler. But like, I'm terrified of this. Like, I think Marcus Smart's a dude you like to have, but I don't know if you can transition him back to a lead guard and have Schroeder off the bench and him come in and get those 24 to 30 minutes. Like, that guy lost a bunch of money in the last year, but I don't know. I don't know if I like how they're like, I like the extension and keeping him around, and Marcus Smart is an important player on a contender. I just don't know if the way they're going to use him now is the way I would use him at this point, because I think this is just going to lead to more Marcus Smart shots, which is not a good thing.
You know, I like Marcus Smart. I'm pretty sure if we can get him here in Houston, I think he would love that, man.
Mm.
I think we should be optimistic about Marcus Smart because he's pretty good player, man. He's made some good shots. Now, back in the day, he used to take some bad shots, but you can tell over time, in the last 2-3 years, he's working the shot. He's able to hit those shots now, which is really impressive, man. Really good defender, really intelligent guy, knows his moments, not afraid of the moments. You know, he's a guy that can take a shot, and you'll be okay with it because he can make it now. Man, I like Marcus Smart, you know, playing the one. I mean, let's Boston Celtics, you know, starting five. Let's say Marcus at the one, right? You got Tatum at the two. You got, well, Tatum or Brown at the two or three. So that's one area right there. You got Horford back, so he's at the one. So, I mean, Dennis, six man, I guess. He'll probably go back to playing some six man again. And the fourth guy, what you want to do, Robert Williams? I mean, that's a good 1-2 punch. He's a very, you know, athletic guy that can run the court. But Marcus Smart, man, he's a good playmaker, good passer, could put guys position to score. You know, I think Marcus Smart better than Dennis Schroeder by far. And so he deserves, and that Boston organization, they love him. You know, Danny Ainge loved him. Of course, Brad Stevens did. That's why he gave my attention. And I think, you know, I don't want to butcher the new coach's name, but
M.A. Udoka.
There you go. Mm. I think he would want him there because he's a guy that adds that grit and that grind, right? He's a guy that will get in your best player's face and talk all the noise, and he's not scared of nobody. Doesn't back down to nobody, and he's a better version of Patrick. He's a better version of Patrick Beverly.
Yeah, I would agree. Last thing, and we'll wrap up here. Josh Hart got an extension. They kept him around in New Orleans. Another, speaking of just another vet getting paid, another smart contract where a lot of these guys like the Evan Fourniers, the Josh Harts, the Marcus Smarts, guys that you could see playing in the Final Five on good teams, getting paid and just being another piece and a guy you can move if you need to. But Josh Hart sticking around for a little bit longer because that New Orleans team, they need shooting. And Josh Hart is one of their more reliable shooters. And I think this was a must do for David Griffin, because I still have a lot of questions about if this New Orleans team, like their defense sucked last year with Van Gundy, and that was part of the reason he got just fired and they mutually parted ways because they just tuned him out and it didn't work.
Fucking dude, he's a Van Gundy is a deep, I don't know if it's his brother or him, but between those two, I think it's Stan. Stan, I know he's Jeff's a better defense coach than he is, but Stan, you know, he's a like Redick said a long time ago, his style of play is a little, you know, downplayed now. It's different. Guys are younger, coaching a new era. So yeah, he's out the door. I think he couldn't get the players, and of course they have Zion Williamson there, and they want to win now. Of course, with a guy like Zion, you know.
I just don't know how that's going to work. You just brought in Devontae Graham in a sign-in trade, so we'll see how that works. But like, they're going to run into next year with a starting backcourt of Devontae Graham and Nikhil Alexander-Walker. Like, Jonas Valanciunas.
That's a good backcourt, bro. That's a good backcourt.
It's good offensively. They're going to get torched. Like, that backcourt is getting torched in the West. Like, I don't know who they're defending in this group. And if Valanciunas is also starting with them, like, they're going to be putting in pick and roll coverage constantly. Like, I don't know how that's going to look. I mean, Jackson Hayes probably needs to play a lot more, but yeah. I don't know. I do not like this Pelicans roster at all.
I think, you know, Valanciunas is not a good defender on pick and roll. He's a pretty good scorer for what he does. I really do like Jackson Hayes. I like Josh Hart. And I think those guys will get some serious minutes because they can play really good defense. Josh Hart is a really, you know, grind guy, 3-year extension. Kind of weird deal how he got a 3-year deal. He's more of a 2-year guy, but somebody trusts Josh Hart, and that's pretty cool. You know, he played in L.A. for a little bit with LeBron and, of course, over the time with Brandon Ingram and stuff like that. But I think they're really depending on Brandon Ingram to step up, Zion Williams to step up. If you can have him playing more pick-and-roll coverage instead of Valanciunas, that's a heartbreaker. Like, now, Nikhil Alexander, man, I do like him. I liked him last year, and I'm like, man, look, I'll give you Eric Gordon. Every other trade on make sense cap wise, man, I'll give you Eric Gordon for Nikhil Alexander.
Sending Eric Gordon back to New Orleans?
Oh.
He didn't want to go there the first time.
Oh, man, I know, but I mean, hey, man, give me this.
What do you have against Eric Gordon? You're just making him go back to where he doesn't want to be. Who can forget that? Do you remember that trade photo with the Chris Paul trade where he's holding the jersey? Wasn't it Chris Kamen, him? I'm trying to think who else was in that photo. It was one of the saddest team photos after a new trade I've ever seen. But let me read this to you. So the starting five last year for the Pelicans, Lonzo, Bledsoe, Ingram, Zion, Steven Adams. As of right now, next year, Devontae Graham, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Ingram, Williamson, Valanciunas. Is this not a worse team? Like, in your closing five, is this not a worse group than what they had last year that got somebody fired and did not make the playoffs? Like, this is a worse team to me.
I think, I don't want to say they were worse, but I think Eric Bledsoe wasn't a good one in general. He's a guy that's trying to prove something when I think his time is really on the bench and he was starting. So that's why I probably would think that as his job. You give him guys like Nikhil Alexander a chance. Yeah, well, I think the Pelicans need all the TV coverage? Hell no. Stop giving them TV coverage for one. Please stop giving them TV. Stop putting them on TNT and ESPN. Like, come on, man. I mean, give they have Zion Williamson, he's a freak. He's a great player, man. But, man, I think we should have more TV exposure than they should. But Lonzo Ball going to Chicago, man. I mean, you know, I think Lonzo's better than, you know, Devontae Adams. Because he can play defense and he's starting to come along as a scorer now. But I think this Pelicans team, you know, won't be, like you say, it won't be the best, but they'll be a decent team where they can play basketball and win some good games. It just depends who they're playing tonight, the game plan, and how they're coaching, and how hard they want to win. And that's what it is, man.
I don't know. I have a strong raised eyebrow about the Pelicans right now. I'm not a believer in where they're going and what's happening there. I'm going to bet against them. I think it's going to get uglier with Zion and Ingram. I do not believe in this group. The West is too stacked. You cannot be running out with this group and expect to keep Zion happy. This is not the look for me.
Yeah, they're probably going to fire David Griffin real soon. You know, I think if nothing goes right this year and they miss the playoffs again, which they probably are, they're going to fire David Griffin. Simple as that.
We'll see. We'll see. What can we check out from you, Zach, across Dream Shake and everywhere else this week?
Dude, I'm trying to work on an article right now. It's just been so crazy.
Same. Once I get done here, I'm hopping back too. The grind never stops.
Yeah, it never stops. Man. I'm just a little tired tonight. I'm trying to get it wrapped up tonight. Working on a podcast myself in the future. But as of right now, with a guy named James Percy, covers Wolves up there. So I guess we're going to do he's a big Rockets guy too, so we're probably going to do a podcast in the future. Just got to get some things handled real quick. Long day for me. A little tired. I probably won't work at night because I'm trying to hold my eyes open. Like,
I love that you're right this now. Honest. I've never had anyone this honest about, like, dude, I'm not going to lie. I'm really tired for your podcast tonight. I'm really tired.
I just had a long day, man. Sleepy. Mm-hmm. So I still want to make time for this podcast. It was a great podcast, but we had a good conversation.
Well, I appreciate that, man.
Yeah, man. But like I said, I have an article coming out soon. Just got to, you know, finish it. Hopefully, I can finish it by Thursday.
Mm.
Get it out to my editor by Friday, and you know, we'll go from there, right?
Well, you got some time. You got some time. I'm losing it because I start graduate school again the next semester tomorrow. So we're back. I've gotten used to this summer vacation. I've gotten used to not spending all my hours or my free time at the library. So that's back in it as well. Yeah. And then we have NBA basketball in 2 months. Like, it's right around the corner.
Yeah, right now, man, it's really time to, I wouldn't say go on vacation for me.
Mm.
The grind never stops. You know, you're always trying to figure out what's going on, press conference wise, trying to figure out what's new, what's going on, you know, Eric Gordon rumors, will they come up again? So right now, I might go on a little vacation right now. I have this article, I'm going to go do a little vacation. Keep my eyes on the street. Probably put some stuff out still, because you gotta put stuff out to be for your viewers. But as of right now, man, I'm just gonna, you know, enjoy my family and, you know, after this article, and just focus on what I got going on right now.
All right, we'll do that. That's always a good thing. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. We'll have to talk NBA again soon.
Please do, man. You got my DM, man.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloane.